This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join our guest for the day, Oanda market analyst Kenny Fisher. And in the USA, it is Trader Nick. Good afternoon from London, guys.
Hey, Kenny. Hey, Johnny.
Hi, guys.
Now, it's been a while since we all spoke together. I mean, this time last week seems like an age ago, considering in between we've had the USA attacks on Iran, the price of oil shooting up, the price of oil then plummeting down, and here we are with a ceasefire. So things are back to relative normality if this ceasefire is going to hold. And Nick, we've seen an all-time high from the NASDAQ today. Is that reflective of the geopolitical situation? Are things now much more positive than they were, say, 48 hours ago?
Yeah, Johnny, and I think when we look at the NASDAQ hitting an all-time high, it can sometimes feel sort of like it is gaslighting you a little bit. You have all of these very difficult things that are going on in the world that, of course, are deeply rooted in all sorts of different areas of the world. You have, you know, what's going on in Ukraine and Russia and in Israel and Iran. You have all these tensions, and yet the stock market hits an all-time high. It can be a little bit confusing at first, but I do think as we get into the discussion about oil prices, there is something there that the market really likes. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But before we talk about that, let's just kind of set the scene as to why the stock market can be at all-time highs. First, what took us away from all-time highs in the first place? Well, it was the worries about tariffs, right? The uncertainties about trade dynamics. And what have we seen since then? Well, if you are not a big fan of Trump, then you've heard the taco statement, right? Trump always chickens out. And if you do like Trump, then you say, hey, look, he's a businessman negotiating. And so the point is, the tariff lows where we saw, oh my gosh, we're going to see this isolationist kind of move and the U.S. is going to trade with nobody. We've seen that really walk back from the edge of the cliff there. And we've mostly seen, you know, we've seen a trade deal with the U.K. We've seen what looks like deals are going to happen. And the most important part is that the worst case scenarios, the 145% tariffs on China and things like that, those do not look likely to happen. So we knocked that off of our, you know, doomsday list, if you will. Then when it comes to monetary policy, it does look like most Fed officials are in consensus that we're likely to get rate cuts this year, right? Depending on how many, that's up for debate. If we're going to get 2, 3, 1, et cetera, there's people on, the jury's out on that. But the point is, rate cuts seem to be the next move for the Fed. That is stimulative. We also have earnings in the United States holding up pretty strong relative to what people thought they were. And we see a labor market that seems to be holding up okay. So the soft landing story seems to be back on the menu. And so the NASDAQ, as you pointed out, back to those all-time highs. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, Johnny, this idea that, you know, by the time everything looks like it's getting better, the stock market's already going to be at the highs. And that's what we see happening now. And this is before everything even looks all squared away, because we do, of course, still have our list of problems. But you can see just when things start to tilt in the direction of, okay, we look okay in multiple areas, the stock market is, you know, like I said, racing to that all-time high. So we've seen a really impressive bounce back, a very resilient market here. And not to mention one of the broader themes in the last few years that really carried us out of that 2022 low has been the AI trade, right? The hype, the excitement, the stimulus that comes with it of you know, this giant CapEx cycle that we're seeing from these major corporations spending tons of money investing in AI. So there's a number of tailwinds that I think that this market currently has, despite the uncertainties in the Middle East. And when we talk about oil, we'll also talk about how that got brushed to the side in terms of a worry as well.
Just add to Nick's excellent summary there. I think we would agree that we're finding ourselves right now in the markets in a risk-on environment. We're seeing the U.S. dollar is down quite a bit against the majors. As Nick explained, the NASDAQ is up to record highs. Really, the hype over the oil shock that we would see in the Middle East due to the Iran-Israeli war seems to have dissipated quite a bit. We're seeing the oil prices are pretty much around where they were before the war started in about 2 weeks ago. So it seems that with the risk on, we can look forward to perhaps, as Nick mentioned, the Fed lowering rates. We'll talk a little bit about Powell saying that he's not in a rush to do so, but perhaps some of the risk factors have dissipated, such as the Middle East and the tariffs as well. It seems that we may have found ourselves now in smoother waters, and that could be of a real effect on how the Fed acts in the next few months.
And Kenny, you used the word hype when you were talking about the oil markets, and I wonder whether from a long-term point of view, people might take the view that actually when it comes to some of these geopolitical situations, as we've seen in the Middle East, particularly over the last couple of weeks, the effect on the oil price, yes, it did go up a fair amount, but the effect on the oil price isn't quite as severe when you compare it to, say, what happened in the 1970s. Because there are so many alternatives now to oil. Plus, we have a huge abundance of the stuff as well. So it looks like the markets in terms of oil are pretty robust. And in terms of the medium-term outlook, when it comes to things like inflation, interest rates, and so on, a much more positive outlook when you consider where people were talking about nightmare scenarios just a couple of weeks ago, you know, mining the Straits of Hormuz, stuff like that, which would have been very, very difficult, but never happened.
Yeah, Johnny, in terms of your concept of like how much the price of oil shocked to the system component, those comments that you made, I thought was what was interesting in all of this was that pretty quickly in all this, China made a threat to Iran, basically, don't close the Strait of Hormuz, because they get so much of their oil from Iran. And so that really stunted, I think, the level of potential for escalation. And that's why the market itself, like the stock market, was able to bounce back so quickly, was you had this, that was in terms of the global impact, that was the biggest threat to the whole situation, is the supply of oil being cut off. And their biggest customer is China. So this dynamic, that was what the market, as cold as it may sound, of course, you have all these terrifying things happening. The focus of the market was, what about the supply of oil? Is that going to get disrupted? And so that was the big question that the market had. And as soon as we saw the attacks that were launched at military bases, U.S. military bases, what people immediately began noting all over the internet, I noticed, was that there was not a closure of the strait. And so that was like not what was going on. And so that focus quickly took fire, and oil prices immediately started dropping precipitously, because that was the big worry. That was the tail end event, the black swan, if you will, to inflation and oil prices, was that dynamic really changing for the global oil supply. And so that's where I think that you had such a sharp reversal in oil prices, because that got taken off the table from Chinese comments. You know, it was a very interesting kind of 48-hour period to see how fast that oil price dropped. I mean, that's one of the biggest drops in oil prices that we've seen in multiple years in a two-day window. To drop, 15.5% is pretty crazy.
Absolutely fascinating. When it comes to the likelihood of a cut in rates, you've both talked about a much more optimistic outlook in terms of tariffs. We've covered oil as well and the threat of inflation. Are you both of the view now that the Fed is going to cut rates soon?
Okay, that's a bit of a hardball question, Johnny. If we look at what Chairman Powell said yesterday when he testified before a House committee, I think we got more of the same. He said there won't be any further rate cuts until the Fed has a better handle on the impact of tariffs. Now, we've seen, again, when we talked about the doomsday scenarios with oil, it seems that there was a lot of concern that the tariffs would lead to much higher inflation, and that hasn't happened yet. Powell has said that, well, it hasn't happened yet, but it's filtering through the economy. It could take another few months. But still, when we look at inflation overall, it's pretty much it contained. Powell did mention yesterday that inflation is above 2%. I think that's also a pointed reminder to President Trump, who keeps throwing criticism his way about not lowering rates. And Powell can easily deflect that by saying, well, inflation is over 2%, over our target. I can't really lower rates. But as far as cutting rates, I don't think Powell is inclined to do so, although we have seen that a couple of members of FOMC did say earlier this week or late last week that they could see a rate cut in July. So there seems to be a bit of dissension within the Fed. Perhaps Nick wants to elaborate.
Yeah, Kenny, I think what you mentioned with the other members, there has been a rising, although most are still kind of in the same camp as Powell of like, let's hold steady and wait and see kind of approach. We do see a rising group or collection of Fed members more poised towards cutting interest rates, notably like Waller and Bowman coming out, especially dovish, suggesting that rate cuts in July could be appropriate. And to your point too about how the so far we have not seen a dramatic rise in inflation. The last time I was on the podcast, I discussed the idea that we've had four back-to-back inflation reports that were lower than what consensus was expecting. And so we have not seen a huge spike in inflation at this point. Doesn't mean that it's not coming. Doesn't mean that those things can't be a future potential thing. But I think that the frustration of some of the other committee members and some of the stuff that I've been discussing here on the podcast too, personally, is that I think that you're concept of the concept of, okay, we don't want to be predictive, we want to be data dependent. There are several things that would suggest, in my view, that the labor market is starting to cool and that we're seeing some things. And Waller actually made the point that, you know, if do we really want to, we don't want to wait too long. We don't actually want to wait for breakage in the labor market if we don't have to. And so I think the doves are saying that. I think right now there's a strong point to be made for both. We are going into untreaded waters with these tariff circumstances, but at the same time, we're seeing some economic data that's weakening. And so there are some people who are saying, let's make a cut now rather than, you know, and I think that the other consensus, the other part of it is we don't have to cut a full percentage point. Donald Trump would, of course, want us to cut off a whole 1% right away. But I think many committee members are saying, you know, a gradual cut starting in July could be appropriate. So we'll see how everything comes down to it. But so far, we have seen expectations for a rate cut in July still slightly increased. They're not dramatic. They're definitely very far from being consensus. But there has been, with all the commentary, a slight uptick in the probabilities for a rate cut in July. Still think it's unlikely, but it definitely causes a stronger probability for September to have seen cuts.
And finally, Kenny, we had some inflation numbers from Australia earlier today, and they came in lower than expected.
That's correct, Johnny. Inflation was actually quite a bit lower than projected. Headline CPI went down to 2.1%, down from 2.4%. And the key CPI core indicator went down to 2.4% from 2.8%. So very nice drops there, which I'm sure the Reserve Bank will be pleased with. And the markets also responded to the inflation report. Right now, there's about a 90% chance of a rate cut in July. And the markets have also priced in three more rate cuts for the rest of the year, which would bring, if that's correct, we would have five rate cuts in 2025, which is almost every other month. And I think that's interesting because it ties back to our discussion about how tariffs, Australia is also worried about is about tariffs, how can it damage the economy and raise inflation. And the policymakers aren't, as we mentioned before, are not seeing any increase in inflation. We just saw quite a low drop in inflation in Australia. And so I think the RBA, the market's expected to be quite dovish and to continue cutting. And I think perhaps other central banks will be looking at this and could follow suit if the tariffs, as we discussed before, don't really manifest themselves into higher inflation. That could give a green light to other central banks and perhaps the Fed in September, as we discussed, also lowering rates. So I think inflation reading in Australia, which has raised expectations for a rate cut, could have ramifications for other central banks as well.
Yes, thank you, Kenny. Very interesting stuff. We will speak to both of you at the end of the week.
Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.